As we are getting into the lesson, I want to spend just a few moments defining our terms, all right? So understanding what gratitude and therefore what ingratitude is. And it makes note in the lesson that the word ingratitude is not found in the scriptures. And so we define that negative aspect by defining the positive. What's thankfulness? And then the correlation is ingratitude's when you don't have that. So looking at what thankfulness is, let's turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Just a moment. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And he talks about in the lesson this Eucharisteo, that is the root. You know, it's at the heart of all these words that are translated into thanksgiving. And I think we find some help for defining what that means. You know, I think sometimes we're defining words, we kind of walk around in circles. So somebody says, what does gratitude mean? And then you go look it up and it says to be thankful or to have a feeling of thanks. Oh, thank you. That's very helpful. You know, so sometimes we want a little bit more depth and a little bit more help in understanding what we're looking at. And I think that when we find it in certain contexts like we're looking at here in 2 Corinthians 4, it helps us think a little bit deeper about the meaning of the word. So he says here, 2 Corinthians 4, verse 15, for all things are for your sake, so that the grace which is spreading to more and more people may cause the giving of thanks to abound to the glory of God. All right. Now, what's helpful about defining thanks in this passage is that we have two related words, and the related words are grace and thanks. All right. So in the lesson, when you see Eucharisteo, the charis there, or the charis, all right, that's the Greek word for grace. All right, so in this passage, what you have is the word grace or charis there, so that the grace, which is spreading more, causes the giving of thanks. There's your Eucharisteo. And so there's our grace word again in the midst of that word thanks, to abound to the glory of God. The idea is that when you have a gift given, thanks is the return for that gift. All right. So it's turning that grace back around. So I've been given some grace. Thanks is recognition of that grace I've received. It's a returning of grace. And I've mentioned this before, but that's where the appropriateness of the phrase saying grace comes from. All right. It's, in fact, sometimes the word grace is translated thanks because it is a form of giving a gift. And in fact, I would just point to that right at the start here, that thanks is something that you must give freely. If it's something you give by obligation, then that's not really gratitude. That's not really thanks. And ingratitude can be seen while someone is saying thank you, while someone is doing something that seems to express gratitude. For instance, when your child receives a gift at Christmas, they get socks or underwear. What do you have to tell them? What are you supposed to say? And they say, thank you. Is there gratitude there? No, in fact, there's a great deal of ingratitude that goes along with that. They're covering up their ingratitude with a show of gratitude. All right. They don't feel that they've really received a particular gift, that they've received any grace. And so they're not returning grace. And so gratitude is a real recognition that I've received something. And then it's a returning on that and offering grace in return. And it's not something that should be forced. There are a couple of places that we might go to show this nature of gratitude needing to be freely given. The Old Testament, the thanksgiving offering. God regulated so much of what the people were to give. When you go to chapters 1, 2, and 3 of Leviticus, you've got the burnt offering, you've got the grain offering, and you've got the peace offering, and it is very detailed. This is what you give, this is how you give it, and you do it just so. When it comes to the thanks offerings, the offerings of thanksgiving, that's your choice. And God leaves it up to the people. How much? How often? Now, he prescribes when to do it. You know, you add it on to this offering and so forth, and how to bring that to God. But it's up to you what you want to bring. And that's how thanks is supposed to be offered. We find a correlation in the New Testament where we find, for instance, in 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9, where it's talking about the giving of the gift. And how does God want us to give? Cheerfully. It's that idea of, look, not by compulsion. It's not, you gotta give. You're supposed to give. You have to say thank you. No, it should come from a heart that overflows. And so that's where the giving should come from. And that's the nature of thanksgiving. That's the nature of gratitude. So, it involves both the feeling, the sensation of joy or pleasure at having received something, but then also the action that goes along with it, or the direction that goes along with it. If you have just one of those, then gratitude's not complete. So you might have joy. Let's go back to the child who's received a gift. Now, instead of socks or underwear, he's received the video game that he's been looking for all year. And he's gotten just what he wants. And he has a sensation of joy that comes along with opening up that gift. But instead of saying anything or directing that joy in any particular direction, he just goes and plugs it up and plays it all day. And maybe even brags to his friend that he's got a better video game than his friend does. Well, that's not gratitude. All right. It's joy. There is a pleasure there, but it's not directed in the right direction. So we want that pleasure, but then it's got to be directed, and something has to be done or said or aimed to the giver of the gift. All right. So that pleasure's got to be pointed in the right direction. But again, if we just say thank you to the giver, but we really don't mean it, we really don't have the feeling, then that's not gratitude either. So both of those things combined. And I would like to point out, just thinking through some things that help us in our gratitude, or that, I guess, make the gratitude deeper. Firstly, how badly do we need the gift? All right. So the thing that we've received, the grace that we've received, our gratitude for it is going to be increased the more we need the thing that we've been given. That makes sense, doesn't it? So when you are, you know, when you just feel like, you know, you don't know where to turn, you don't have what you need, you're going to starve or something, and someone gives you some kind of financial aid or some kind of food and helps you in that dire circumstance, you just can't say enough. Versus, you just got everything you need and somebody just gives you a little bit of icing on the cake. Well, it just doesn't mean as much. The Pharisees looked at God's grace to them as just icing on the cake. You know, when you have the comparison of the tax collector and the Pharisee praying, you know, there's the Pharisee. He doesn't have any gratitude. He doesn't come to God with a desperate need, but he thinks he's got everything he needs. Versus the publican, God be merciful to me, a sinner. He's desperate. And so he recognizes his desperation. And there's another aspect that kind of goes along with that we'll talk about in just a minute. Secondly, so you have in the first place, how badly do I need the gift? How important is it to me? Secondly, how much has the giver gone through to give this to me? So we say sometimes it's the thought that counts. And that's true. To a great degree. Now, that's not all that counts, but it is a great deal of what counts. So, for instance, when our children give us something and they've sacrificed to give it to us, even if the gift itself is not that meaningful, the fact that they've gone out of their way, that they've tried very hard to give us something meaningful, makes it meaningful to us. And so we see that, for instance, in Jesus' recognition of the giving from the woman who only had two pennies, basically. So she brings that, and that's her offering, and it's the thought that counts, right? It's the recognition of the sacrifice that she is making to give that gift. So if somebody gave us something, and it wasn't that meaningful, it's not exactly what we needed, but they went through great trials to bring that to us. That alone would make it special to us. And so we recognize that. And then finally, there is the increasing of thanks or gratitude as we recognize how much we do or do not deserve the gift. So when we get our paychecks, how many of us go into the office to our boss and say, "Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate the paycheck today." No, we don't. And the reason people don't go to their boss and say something like that is because, well, I mean, I gave you 40 hours of labor this week, and so I deserve the paycheck. And now you could say, look, I'm grateful to have a job and, you know, other things, but there's an exchange. I gave you something and you gave me something. And so the gratitude doesn't go very high. It's like when we say thank you at the store after we've purchased something. We say thank you sort of as a common courtesy, but we're not just like, oh, thank you so much for this food that I just paid $30 for. Well, they're thanking me because I just gave them $30 for this food. We've both given each other something we want. But then somebody gives you something that you can't ever pay them back for. And there's nothing you've done to them to deserve what they're giving to you. You see how your thankfulness, your grace to them will increase based on the grace that they've given to you. And so that connection. Well, of course, with God towards us, all of those things should be at the very height. We should recognize a desperate need for what he's given to us. That, you know, that it should be the most important thing in our lives, that without him, we are lost and dying in our sins. And so we desperately need what God is offering. That should make our gratitude, you know, immeasurable. We should recognize the tremendous sacrifice that he's gone through, sacrifice that we can't even comprehend, to put his own son on the cross, watch him suffer, Jesus in his position to willingly put himself on the cross and offer himself. All of that shows how far he's willing to go. There's nobody who will ever go as far for us as God has, sacrifice as much to give us a gift. That should make our gratitude immeasurable. And then finally, our unworthiness. We will never be more unworthy for anything so much as we are unworthy for what God has given us. And so all of these things should put our gratitude towards him at a place far above any thankfulness that we could ever have for anything else. Therefore, to be ungrateful for that it's disgusting. And as we look at the picture of the Pharisees, as we look at the pictures of the people who do not recognize God and what he has done for them, it is a pitiful and hard to fathom picture. And yet we can find ourselves in that as we are distracted and pay little attention to what God has done for us in our own lives. Look over at Romans chapter 1 then. Let's begin there as we look at examples of lack of gratitude. One of the things that's intriguing to me as we look through all of these characteristics is where we find places in Scripture that connect these various sins of the heart to some sort of lack of faith, some sort of unbelief. And here is yet another example. In Romans chapter 1, somebody read verse 21 for us. All right. So here, as we begin dissension, that digression away from God, at the heart of it, at the very base, he says, they rejected God, and what? Nor did they give thanks. They lacked gratitude at the very base of their departure. And so it's a failure to recognize that all these blessings come from God and to continually give thanks to God for all of our blessings. And look at the path that these people, as they forget about God and therefore forget to give thanks to God, the path that they take. And it's one, you know, Paul is painting a picture here. These people, they're gone. They're completely lost. And so he shows that progression, of course, showing the progression of the Jews in a far worse circumstance because they had more reason to know God. But that connection between lack of gratitude and unbelief there, as in so many other instances. As you look at some of the examples of ingratitude We have a couple of examples here that are given to us. First is that of the 10 lepers in Luke chapter 17. All right. And so you have the 10 lepers. And so we're told this story. Now, you got leprosy. What can you do about that in New Testament times? Pardon? Yeah, not a lot. You know, in the Old Testament, there are indications that forms of leprosy could come and go. I mean, I think leprosy is kind of cover all for skin disease. But the idea here, you know, it's these people have the sentence on them. They've got the diagnosis. All right. This is cancer. This is inoperable cancer in our modern thought process. All right. So that's the sentence that these people have been given. And so they come to Jesus, and let me point out the desperateness of the situation. You kind of see it there in verse 12, as he entered a village, 10 leprous men who stood where? At a distance. Why? Yeah. Well, there's regulations. You don't touch those people. All right. You don't get near these people. All right. So that should speak to the desperateness of their situation. And they're calling out. They raise their voices. All right. So they can't even just approach him and have a conversation. They've just got to call out, have mercy on us. When he saw them, he says, go and show yourselves to the priest. So they're going. And it says, as they were going, they were cleansed. All right. Now then, who comes back? One, and who is he? A Samaritan. All right, you see the Samaritans brought up on several occasions. And when the Samaritans are highlighted in so many places in Jesus' life, why are they generally held up in Jesus' life? They are, and what are they usually doing? That's right. They recognize their unworthiness for the gifts that are given to them. Now, all of these men they should have all been in the same boat. And at some level, they all seem to recognize they can't even approach Jesus. They're over there. They're calling out from a distance. And so on that end, they recognize it. But once they receive the relief, then that remembrance, that recognition of their position, it's gone. The Samaritan still recognizes it. He still realizes what's been done. He returns and he comes and he offers thanks to Jesus. And so what we've got to do is we've got to continue the Samaritan is not still mourning in an immediate sense over his leprosy. It's gone. He's rejoicing, but he remembers that he had it. And so the Christian, our sins are washed away when we come to Christ. And when we are baptized with him in his death, our sins are washed away with his blood. We should never forget that. Paul, he doesn't go around moping that he was a sinner, but he doesn't ever forget that he was a sinner. And he doesn't ever forget in gratitude. He's always, I always thank God. And he's always bringing it up. Me, who was the actual terminology is the greatest of sinners. I was the best at sinning. And so he recognizes what's been done for him. He recognizes himself as one of these lepers and would write about himself in that way as someone who's always coming back and always giving thanks for what's been done. Yes. Absolutely. Not only leads us into other sins, but comes from other sins as well. Let's go over to the story of Jonah here, and I think that we'll see some of this. There's several elements, I think, that we see in our society, very prominent in our society, perhaps in the story of Jonah especially. So, as far as the particular part of Jonah's story that we're taking the example of ingratitude from, what has God done for Jonah here in chapter 4? All right, he provides him some comfort, right? Some level of comfort be it small, but a comfort. And then what happens to that comfort? Yeah, all right, so worm comes and eats that, it goes away, and what's Jonah's reaction? Yeah. Life is useless, all right? And what is God's instruction? I mean, what's God teaching Jonah, or trying to teach Jonah? I don't know if he learns it or not, but what's he trying to teach Jonah there? Right. You didn't deserve it in the first place. You should have just been grateful for what you had while you had it. And everything that is given to you, you should be thanking God for. Instead of, what is Jonah actually, what's his attitude towards that? Yeah, he expects it. Entitlement. Entitlement, absolutely, it kills gratitude. It is a sensation of, I am owed certain things. And people will say things like, what did I do to deserve this? The big question that people are constantly asking with regards to God when you talk about agnostics, atheists, and so forth, why would God allow bad things to happen to good people? And a great answer that several have responded back to that with is, why does God do good things to bad people? Because that's all of us. God has done good things for people who do not deserve it. And that is the far greater question. When somebody says, what have I done to deserve this? Maybe we should be asking, what have I done to deserve any better? But I get better. God does better for me all the time. And I ignore it. I don't pay attention to it. And I expect and I wonder why better is not being done for me while ignoring all the good that has already been done for me. And that is the case with Jonah. And part of that is just it's just a discontent and so forth. But let me just suggest another element that goes along with Jonah, that goes along with the nine who did not come back to Jesus. And that is the element of pride. The element of pride comes in here. I deserve what I have. I deserve, it's a failure to recognize that everything that we have that is worth being thankful for is a gift from God. That he is the father of all good things in James chapter 1 and verse 17. He is, every good thing comes from him, and to him we give thanks for those things. But the pride looks and says, you know, I'm doing pretty good because after all, I'm a pretty good guy. I mean, you know, I've established this and I've done this for myself and I really don't have anybody to be thankful to. I'm reminded of the Jimmy Stewart character in the movie Shenandoah and his prayer to God, which is, you know, we plowed the fields, we broke up the dirt, we worked to our bones, and we provided this harvest, but I thank you anyway. And that's the way the Jews looked at God, certainly the way the Pharisees looked at God. We've done all this. We've kept the law, but we thank you anyway. No, we don't have anything. We don't have anything without God. The seeds, the very creation of it all, we do not have without him. And so those are some of the elements of gratitude and some of the hindrances to gratitude that we're going to see in our lives and we're going to see in the lives around us. And we've got to be so careful in instilling in our children the notion that they deserve certain things. And that is just, you know, my wife saw that when she was teaching school. I saw that when I was driving a bus, that parents increasingly are saying things like, my child deserves, you know, fill in the blank. My parents, they let me know very quickly, you deserve nothing. All right. You don't deserve, you know, anything handed to you. Anything given to you, but that you should be grateful for everything that you do receive. That it should never be a sensation of the world owes me something. Or even that my parents owe me anything but love and nurture. But the other things that we think as we look around at other children, when we are children, we look around and we think we deserve the things that child over there has. You see this mentality in the world all around us that increasingly when you see people was reading a biography not too long ago on Andrew Carnegie and all of the charitable work that he did. And basically, this fellow is an article. And this fellow is basically saying that charity means nothing. I mean, he had it to spare. He ought to have been giving it. And the people who are receiving that, they don't think anything of it. It's easy. It's easy for him to give that. He didn't have to. And the people who did receive that, they didn't deserve it. And so there ought to be gratitude. And I'm not holding up Andrew Carnegie and saying that he is the epitome of virtue because of that. But there needs to be a recognition that's not, well, I deserve because you have and I don't. So you should give it to me. And that attitude has turned towards God. God should bless me. I should get things from God. And that's the attitude of Jonah, that he deserves it. That's the attitude ultimately of the nine lepers. All right, I want to look at a few passages here that I think make some connections with thankfulness that I think are important for us to give attention to. Over in Colossians chapter 4. Colossians chapter 4. So turn over there to Colossians 4 and put a finger there, and then turn over to Matthew chapter 26 and verse 41. And I want to read these two passages in conjunction. All right, so Matthew 26 and verse 41. And then we'll look at Colossians chapter 4 and in verse 2. And John, would you read those two passages in succession there? All right. So over there in Matthew, as Jesus is there in the garden and he's telling them, be watchful. How? With what? Prayer. Now, that's not usually what we think of as being on the alert, you know, being watchful, be watchful in prayer. All right. So it's the prayer that is to focus their attention. All right, that's what they're supposed to do. Now, over in Colossians chapter 4, we have very similar language there. Colossians 4 and verse 2. Again, devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert with thanksgiving. All right, you know, focus your attention with thanksgiving. That idea of thanksgiving being the thing that helps us to be alert, that helps us to be aware. How might those go hand in hand? All right. When bitterness might creep in, when anger and malice and discontent and pride and all these sorts of elements that attack us in the heart are there. If our attention, our alertness, we're looking for things to be thankful for. It is a defense. It is a defense against those things. So watch, be on the alert. You know, you got Satan is coming after you. How do you defend thanksgiving? I love that. You know, that there's a shield to what Satan is doing, and to be on the alert with thanksgiving. It's a beautiful picture of a defense mechanism that we might not think of. You know, we're thinking military. We're thinking fight fire with fire. Here, you be watchful with prayer, with thanksgiving. And that's the thing that's going to push back against that assault that is coming after us. Along those lines, look over to Ephesians chapter 5. And there's sort of a beautiful balance here. Ephesians chapter 5. And beginning there in verse 15. Ephesians 5, beginning in verse 15. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So then, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not forget, or rather, do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. Speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks for all things, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, to God, even the Father. All right, so he starts off there. Be careful. Walk as wise. Make the most of your time because the days are evil. All right. So we've got a bad circumstance. We live in evil times. We could say that today. All right. So be watchful and be careful. And, how do you defend against that? You understand what the will of the Lord is. You be filled with the Spirit. And what is the result? You sing and you give thanks for all things. Here is an element of thanksgiving that I think is so important, is that we have to be very careful. Our thanksgiving is not tied up like the little child in getting the video game that we want on Christmas morning. But that we, as people who are adults, recognize the great value of everything that God gives us. It's not a Pollyanna. All right. It's not just I just don't pay attention to the bad. No, he says the evil days are here. There's a recognition of that. So we're not clueless. We don't just have an empty sort of a mindless Thanksgiving. I just give thanks for everything and don't pay attention to the bad. I give you a good illustration of this is Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 with the thorn in the flesh. He recognizes the evil of the thorn in the flesh. He even says, it's Satan. It's a messenger of Satan sent to buffet me. All right, so that puts it in pretty stark terms. This is a bad thing. And then he says, I prayed to God, and the answer is, my grace is sufficient for you. And so his response is, I will boast. In other words, I'll have gratitude for even this. I'll have pleasure in even this thing that has caused me pain and anguish because I recognize the value of even that in my life. So our thankfulness is not, let me see what I have to be thankful for today. Well, I'm not thankful for that and I'm not thankful for that, but there are some good things going on in my life. But rather, it's a recognition all things work together for good for those who love the Lord. And I can be thankful. I can be thankful on my worst day for value that God is bringing even through the misery and even through the pain. And there's tension there. It's like Paul saying that we sorrow, yet we remain joyful. Well, how? Is there a sort of a joyful sorrow at times? Yeah, we know that. We've been through joyful sorrow at times. Well, there's a thanksgiving in the midst of evil days. And so we want to recognize that ingratitude or gratitude is not just something to express on the happy days, but it is something to express even in the midst of trial, even in the midst of difficulties. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 4, while we're there in that passage, there's something also as a defense. Gratitude, what it can keep us from. It says there should be must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. So here's the contrast. Or what do? We say vain and silly and futile things, and we say coarse things, and we say filthy things. What do you need to do to get that out of your mouth? You insert gratitude. And when you're expressing thanks to God, there's no room for this. And let me put this in terms of our relationships with one another. When there is filthiness and when there's meanness and when there's coarse jesting between us, that thanksgiving in a conversation brings a sobriety that puts away all of those things. So maybe we're engaged in coarse jesting, or maybe we're engaged in some sort of insulting that is going on between us and another. Maybe there's some malice here. What could I thank my God always for you do to that conversation? And Paul brings that to his conversation with people in so many of the letters. How many letters does he start out that way? Oh, I thank my God always for you. Does that mean that who he's talking to, there's no problems? Oh, he says it to the Corinthians. Maybe one of the letters where he has more problems than any others. And he starts out, I'm so thankful for you all. And that keeps that trouble from devolving into just sort of a petty back and forth. It doesn't mean that he's not going to say something to them and say, look, we got to fix this. but it keeps it in the context of, I love you and I am thankful for you. And so gratitude keeps us from lowering our conversation and therefore our thoughts about other people. That's our second bell. I appreciate every, that is second bell, right? Appreciate everybody's good attention. We'll pick up there with bitterness in our next lesson.